secular point of view, not preparing us for anything. From that point of view, everything is arbitrary and life has no overarching meaning, and we pass from the meaningless circumstances of our birth through a series of equally meaningless circumstances in our life and end with the ultimately meaningless circumstances of our death. And it all means nothing.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Life is a series of circumstances. It starts at the very beginning. You are born in a certain place, so it is recorded on your birth certificate. You are born into a particular family. You are born surrounded by specific economic circumstances and conditions. You don't know anything about all that yet. You cry because you're hungry. You fuss because you want your diaper changed. You learn to laugh when the adults around you act silly. You know, where's that baby? And that kind of thing. But all these other things are already going on in the background and they are shaping you. You have a genetic inheritance for one thing, and it's going to make a difference in your life as you move forward. You have an evolving diet that you have no control over, and that's going to make a difference in your life as you move forward. Study after study reveals that birth order makes a difference. Eldest children are different from middle children, and both are different from the baby, and so it goes with these circumstances. All of it is happening, and we have no say about it. Your parents may be the sort that rush you off to the doctor for every scrape, hiccup, and boo-boo. Or they may be more like my parents. Oh, for crying out loud, it's still attached. The Mercurochrome is on the second shelf. Yeah. At least my parents didn't share my paternal grandfather's view that all injuries could be improved by the application of a pocket knife and a magical elixir composed of lard, turpentine, and salt. We kids got very wary about Grandpa knowing that we had scratches, bruises, or splinters. But those were my circumstances. You had yours. And they shaped us. And they continue to shape us after childhood. I do not mean to imply at all that we have no choice in the kind of person we become. Our freedom is not limited. We make real choices. We make meaningful choices. But even our choices are made in response to the circumstances in which we find ourselves. And it's all preparing us for, well, from a strictly secular point of view, not preparing us for anything. From that point of view, everything is arbitrary and life has no overarching meaning, and we pass from the meaningless circumstances of our birth through a series of equally meaningless circumstances in our life and end with the ultimately meaningless circumstances of our death. And it all means nothing. What a sad, sad mindset. The Apostle Paul and many other biblical writers had a different perspective. They believed that the times we were born into are the times that we should be born into to achieve the purposes of God. We saw back in Acts 17, as Paul insisted, that God determines the boundaries, the habitations, the languages, and so forth of all the nations that ever have been or ever will be on the earth in order to accomplish his purposes. And since Paul says that God called me from before my birth, then we know that Paul believes that God not only establishes the big, broad parameters, but he calls individuals forth from those circumstances in which he has placed them. I quickly add, this does not detract from our free will. Any seeming conflict is an illusion. That is not what this sermon is about, but if that troubles you, come see me, and I will be glad to talk with you about the difference between God's foreknowledge and our free will. Let it just be said now that we can make choices, we can do a lot of things right. We also are free to make mistakes, and frequently do. And yet, we are placed in circumstances that shape us. All that said, we return now to Acts chapter 22. We left Paul having been rescued from the angry mob in the temple by the Roman commander. We will just shortly, within the narrative of the book of Acts, discover that the commander's name is Claudius Lysias, but he is in charge of the troops that ensure peace and order in the vicinity of the Jewish temple. When I see that, my first thought is usually, who did Claudius Lysias tick off to draw this assignment? Because it was not a coveted assignment, trying to ensure peace and order in the vicinity of the Jewish temple, but it was his assignment, and he had dragged Paul out of there before the Jews could murder him, and he had clapped Paul in chains, just as the Holy Spirit and every prophet between Greece and Caesarea had predicted. If you read the rest of chapter 21, which we did not dwell on last week, you would have seen that Claudius Lysias initially assumed that the Apostle Paul was a particular Egyptian revolutionary who had been stirring up trouble lately. As it turns out, we know a little bit about this revolutionary from sources outside the Bible. The Jewish historian Josephus tells us that the man had rounded up a big following, that they camped in hidden places in the wilderness, and when he thought that their numbers were sufficient, he assembled them on the Mount of Olives overlooking the city of Jerusalem, and he promised them that at his command the walls of Jerusalem would fall down and they would be able to easily march in and take over the place. Apparently this sermon is very unpopular with the younger set today. It's okay. I've told this story before. My old senior minister in Tennessee, Hatley Mabry, once told of a lady who was leaving the sanctuary because her baby was crying and crying and crying. He said, "Lady, that baby's not bothering me at all." And she fired back, "Well, you're bothering him." And out they went. Anyway, the Egyptian promised that the walls of Jerusalem were going to fall down, and they did not fall down. Instead, the governor Felix, the fellow who was in the seat that used to be occupied by Pontius Pilate, and who had spies in the Egyptian's followers tracking his movements, showed up with heavily armed Roman forces, and a lot of the Egyptian's followers were killed, and a lot of the Egyptian's followers were captured, and the Egyptian fled and abandoned everybody, and most of them disbanded and never came back together. But all the Roman forces were on high alert, watching for this man to show his face again so he could be apprehended and duly punished. And Claudius Lysias thought for a moment that he had caught the scoundrel, until the Apostle Paul began to speak to him and demonstrated otherwise. Having persuaded Claudius Lysias that he was an honest citizen, Paul got permission from the Roman commander to stand there at the steps, at the head of the stairs, with the Roman soldiers at his back, and try to straighten out this little misunderstanding he had had with the Jews, this misunderstanding so profound that they had intended to kill him on the spot. And he gives them his testimony. He tells them how he had grown up a Jew, just like them, and how he had been through extensive rabbinical training so that he could devote his life to the law of God, and how he had, when he first encountered the Christians in Jerusalem, been one of the chief persecutors of those Christians, and how he had had the Damascus Road experience, which changed his mind, and how God had set him apart and warned him away from Jerusalem on that occasion, and ultimately called him to take the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles. Paul pours out his whole testimony, and having heard all this, the Jews say, "Oh, well, in that case, kill the traitor!" They have not changed their minds at all. And Claudius Lysias has to jerk Paul out of the situation again before they can make good on their threat and drag him back to the Roman barracks. Now, Claudius Lysias has a problem. Paul is not who he thought he was. Oh, if only he were the Egyptian revolutionary, I would know what to do. I'd turn him in. He's a wanted man. I'd get credit, probably a big promotion. But he's not. And I'm not sure really who he is. And this confab that he had with the Jews was carried on in Hebrew. And there was a lot of screaming and shouting. And I don't exactly understand the hubbub, but I can't just turn him loose because the Jews are determined to riot and to illegally execute him. And commanders don't get promotions for allowing riots and illegal executions in Jerusalem. Well, there's an easy solution to all this. All he has to do is question Paul. Just ask him a few questions. The Romans had discovered that this kind of questioning was vastly facilitated by giving a man a good beating first. He took that whip, a good stout wooden handle with a number of leather thongs coming out of it, and each one tipped with a piece of glass or a little piece of sharp metal or a little shard of bone, and you smacked the man on the back 10, 15, 20 times, and he just could not wait to answer your questions. If answering meant that you might not hit him again. This was the way that Paul was about to be questioned. Claudius Lysias had a centurion warming up his questioning arm, and he had soldiers tie leather strips to Paul's wrist and stretch his arms out so that his back would be good and tight and properly presented. And Paul remarks, it seems casually, coolly, almost conversationally, "Hey, what is that law about beating Roman citizens without a trial?" Well, the centurion knows good and well what the law is on that point. You can't do it! And if you do it, you will be the next man to have your arm stretched out and the whip applied to your back. That at least will happen to you, possibly worse. So the centurion runs back to Claudius Lysias and he asks him a question, and he phrases the question in a way that we are very familiar with. He says, "What are you doing?" Have you ever noticed that nothing good follows that question phrased that way? What are you doing? This man that you just about had me whip, he is a Roman citizen. And Claudius Lysias runs back to Paul and says, "You're a Roman citizen?" And Paul says, "Yep." Claudius Lysias' next remark sometimes strikes us as incongruous. "Man, my Roman citizenship cost me a bundle." Just a little historical information here. It was not until the reign of the Emperor Claudius that Roman citizenship was for sale this way. This also helps us date the book of Acts. Claudius Lysias would not have been the commander's birth name. When a person bought Roman citizenship, the fee was paid to the emperor. Claudius was the first emperor to set up this program. And when your citizenship came, you changed your name to the name of the emperor plus some other name. So he became Claudius Lysias when he bought his citizenship. It was part of the deal. But if you had the money, you could game the political system and gain a privileged position if you had the money, and nothing ever changes. But Claudius Lysias spent a bundle to become a Roman citizen, and now he looks at this little nobody Jew and he thinks to himself, "They're just letting anybody into the club now. I mean, it cost me a lot of money, and somehow this guy gets in?" And Paul replies, "Oh, well, I was born a Roman citizen." Now, you need to understand that there were not anywhere near a million born natural Roman citizens in the world at the time. It was a very, very, very small proportion of the population of the Mediterranean world who were born Roman citizens. And Claudius Lysias is now breaking out into a cold sweat because he's thinking, this guy's parents were some kind of big deal. And somewhere in Rome, there's some page in some musty old archive that says, Paul of Tarsus, born a Roman citizen. And if he wants my head, he can have it, because I have thrown him in chains without a trial, and I was just about to have him beat when what I should have been doing was busting Jewish heads to teach them the error of their ways, how you keep your paws off Roman citizens. That's what I should have been doing. And this is the point at which Paul's hitherto arrest becomes special protective custody. Let me get those chains off your wrist, pal. And I promise you, tomorrow I will get the Sanhedrin assembled and we will take you down there and get to the bottom of these pesky charges. You just see if we don't. Now again, I must prepare to quit in the middle of the story. But the story moves forward and we will pick it up again next time. But Paul's Roman citizenship has set in motion a new series of circumstances by which the will of God will be accomplished. Paul was born a Roman citizen. This is the first time that that has come up in the narrative of the book of Acts. Paul was born a Roman citizen. But God, who knows all things, knows this. How many of you seriously think that Paul stands there and says, "Well, I was born a Roman citizen," and God says, "What?" Well, that changes everything. No, God's response would be more along the lines of Bishop to King's Rook 5 check. This is how you play the game, boys. I've got it all arranged. Psalm 139 begins with these words. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. And I mean really known. That part's not in there. I'm adding it. Really, really known me. David continues by asserting that God knows what he, David, is going to do in the course of any given day and all days. Not a word comes out of my mouth, David says, but that God already knew what I was going to say, to which God might reply, I knew he was going to say that. And the truth goes deeper yet. David says in verses 15 and 16, God's eyes saw his unformed substance before David's body came into being in his mother's womb. David says, all my days were written in God's book before the sun rose on the first one of them. Have you ever heard somebody say something like, I was born 100 years too late. Or maybe I was born 100 years too early. No such thing. You were born at just the right time to do the will of God in your times. And your life has been shaped by just the right circumstances for you to do the will of God in your circumstances. And whatever temporary earthly citizenship and memberships any of us hold are just right for leading others into citizenship in the kingdom of God. You are the right person at the right time and the right place to accomplish God's will. Maybe like the Apostle Paul, it will only become clear toward the end of your labors what God's real task for your life was. Maybe, like the Apostle Paul, your swan song will actually be more important than everything that came before it. Maybe, as with the Apostle Paul, some things about the true will of God for your life will not be known to others for hundreds of years until after your earthly death. Maybe that's the case. But rest assured, you are who and where and when you need to be to accomplish the will of God. Never doubt it. Surrender your life and times to His purposes. This is what you were made for. And if you make mistakes, and you will, God will redeem those as well. And you can accomplish His purposes.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.